For today's episode of the Palmcore Podcast, we're very fortunate to have Merlin Mann, who came to New College in 1986, graduated in 1990 or thereabouts, and embarked on a really fascinating career spanning blogging, the onset of desktop publishing, some of the really interesting work he did early in his career. He's also a pretty prolific podcaster. You can catch him on Roderick on the Line and elsewhere. We'll include links to a lot of what Merle has had going on and what he's doing now in the show notes for the episode. He also recently wrote something about New College, which we'll also include in our show notes. Really fascinating thinker, fascinating speaker, and someone who really knows the podcasting format really well. Couple of warnings. The language does get explicit at times. We do some deep dives since we all overlapped in the late 80s into the early 90s. So there is some remembering of names and moments and experiences, including the Lorax Rebellion and a fascinating Breakfast of Champions with Kurt Vonnegut early in Merle's tenure at New College. We'll get into all of that and split it up into two episodes. We wound up getting almost 2 hours worth of Merle's time to record his thoughts and hopefully get him back on again soon. Thanks to everyone who's supporting this show. We're continuing to explore the history of New College with folks who really lived through an experience, a passage down there. Hopefully everyone's enjoying what they're hearing. With no further ado, this is Merlin Mann kicking it old school style on the Palmcore Podcast. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the Palmcore Podcast. Mike Palmer here, joined as always by Megan Citron and Grant Balfour. Welcome back to the show, folks.
Hi.
Hello.
Nice to have you. Nice to have you all here. And as circumstance may have it, we're not alone. We are joined today by a fellow New College alumnus, I believe. Merlin Mann is joining us. Merlin, welcome to the Palmcore Podcast.
Hi, friends. Merlin Mann, 86 is the way they used to say it in the Nimbus.
Nice, nice.
We respect, still say it now.
And I will respect my elder.
Because the canon was, if you, oh, easy, Tex. It's closer than it used to be.
I was part of the legendary class of 88. I'm on record about, you know, just how epic or my class was.
Everybody got so much better at everything the year after I joined there.
But y'all were legends already. You were legends by 88.
Sure.
It was after the Lorax Rebellion.
I climbed every building.
Merlin, welcome to the show. For folks who don't know you, can you give us like a quick rundown of your connection to New College and what's been going on since?
Sure. Yeah. I started growing up in Ohio. Then we moved to Florida when I was 12, and then I went to high school, junior high and high school in Central Florida, Pasco County. And to cut a long story short, my best friend in high school was a guy named Sam Meismer. And his parents, Ken and Abby Meismer, were in, I don't know if they were in the first class, but suffice to say they met there, you know, as Sam was born, Abby dropped out. But Sam, who was my age, was the first child of an alumnus to go to college. And he strongly encouraged me because I wasn't going anywhere particular and certainly nowhere good. So I ended up starting in 86, graduated in whatever that was, April of 1990.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of stuff happened. Now I live in San Francisco and I've lived in the same place for 25 years. Got a wife and a kid and I write and do podcasts.
Yeah. You've been known to chop it up, as I like to say. So we're looking forward to getting some of your...
I'm talking about getting behind the wheels of steel. What are you talking about, Mike?
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
I don't either. It's okay. I can't teach it.
It's all good. But yeah. And you know, I think we all overlap, which is another aspect. Some of these shows have, you know, folks who were further upriver from way back in the day. And sometimes we've been connecting to more recent grads, which has been a cool part of the... But maybe just right. I don't know what order you want to hit things, but we did just bring up when we were talking to Susan Hirschberg, there was talk of the Lorax Rebellion, and it was almost like a cliffhanger where there was some mentioning of trees and police activity on campus and some rabble-rousing, perhaps, and some nonviolent protest, perhaps? Is that?
46 people ended up in jail, I believe it was.
How many?
46.
Wow.
That's out a lot of
people. Really, how many were? What, I don't know, but whatever it was that we really all wanted to be called, I think, the new college, 46. Who were.
Right.
There's so many layers.
Right. And I'm sure there's more to your story. You know, I remember a lot of, there's a lot of Merlin stories that we have from back in the day. You were.
I don't care for that at all.
It's kind of a story that something interesting was going to happen if we were hanging around. But,
I remember you. Were you in a second court double balcony overlooking Palm Court?
Yeah.
And were you with the skateboard guy or Jason? Were you with the nice guy with the pickup truck?
Dan?
Dan was so nice with his pickup truck.
Yes, his yellow Datsun. What's that?
Oh,
Dan was this? Give me the Kenning.
Dan O'Brien. So anyway, we overlap a lot, but for folks who don't overlap, I think we've established that this Lorax Rebellion thing happened in the spring semester. It's kind of like May of 1988, because I had Mandela Effect remembered it as something that happened while I was at school, but it actually happened right before the legendary class of 88 arrived. But you were there a couple years, Merlin. Can I call you Merle? Is that still acceptable, or is it Merlin?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay, totally.
Merle, that's what save on
the soul. That's all my real friends call me.
I'll try not to talk like that. But yeah, so can you catch us up at least on that? And then
how much have we talked about that previously?
Maybe
this is a bag of hair that I only open up periodically. What we'll explain
come
it
up on its own a lot.
This one I think with Susan we maybe got three.
Tell me who Susan Hirschberg is. I'm having a brain fart somewhere between Spazi and the girl who ran the crystal method.
Yes,
I'm having a brain fart in between.
Yes, Spazi. Yes, good connection.
Pelican. She sat in the tree on the bayfront for a year cataloging pelican dives, and she was a biology person.
Didn't like the roommate. It seems like if you didn't like your roommate, it seems like a project. You
really... Oh, I got it.
Oh, well, yeah.
I think she genuinely enjoyed her research.
What? She just liked pelicans better.
Who can blame her? I was just telling Madeline about the first time I ever encountered one of my dearest friends in the entire world, a guy named Dennis Gephardt. And I was because she knows Dennis, and like Dennis is, I consider... Dennis and Michael Ferguson were people that I consider my two best friends, you know, over time, from the time. Dennis more after because we lived together. And Dennis is my age. And because he was able, started a year earlier than I did. But I remember going to a party at Liz, English Department Humanities, Liz with the Bob. Or she was my orientation leader. And I remember this guy walking in overalls. And listeners will not be able to see this face. But if you've ever seen Dennis, you know this face that Dennis has. I want to stipulate for the record, Dennis is absolutely one of the not only smartest, but most emotionally intelligent, down-to-earth, decent people I've ever met in my life. But when you see this guy who's like 6'2 in overalls, you're like, is this an Ed Kemper situation? What are we dealing with here? And I was like, oh, Libby. Libby's like, oh, Libby. that's my roommate, Dennis. Yeah, he's awesome. He could basically go be an engineer today, but now he's studying poetry. And he likes to walk around the East Campus with a clipboard and a tape measure, measuring things and then writing it down. I said, well, that sounds like an interesting guy.
Yeah.
And like, that was what my first week at New College was like, was just being dropped into like people like Dennis and people like Scum and people like Grant.
Scum, just to clarify, has been referenced before, I think in our film episode, right? That was, and he was like affectionately known as Scum, right?
Just Mark Singer, his name was Scum, spelled with a V, because why, Grant?
Renfair.
He couldn't afford a vowel.
Oh, he couldn't afford a vowel. Yes,
oh, right.
Correct. Yes,
Wheel of Fortune
right.
goes all the way back
and
there.
And Scum had gone to New College very briefly. He still ran the film program. This is the kind of thing that happened. And I can't even tell you, like, I am so balls deep in Werner Herzog now. And it all started with Gear A, Wrath of God. Seeing the movies that he brought to me. And there were rules about how you get the movies. Like, it can't be one we've done too recently. It can't be one that's too available at La Video or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it was called. But anyhow, but like just all those people like that.
We talked about Renaissance Video has been brought up
probably what I'm thinking of. Oh, was that the guy with the hat? And he would deliberately give you bad suggestions. He was
I don't remember that.
Probably depended on.
He was very elitist.
He was elitist.
How
quietly and kind of like this.
Yeah.
And all the videos were his own copies that you'd get this kind of black tape with a handwritten label.
Oh my god!
I don't know. Thundercrack.
Pre blockbuster though, right? Or yeah.
Yeah. It was.
Like, I really like these Ken Russell movies. What do you think I should watch? And he go, you should check out this movie with Neil Young called American Stars and Bars. And I got it. And I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. This is terrible. Why would you suggest this? He's like, well, you'll learn. You know. So we're talking about specifically here about the. We'll get into all my questions later, right?
Yeah, we get into whatever you want. So I was just thinking for a continuity.
I'm remembering Christian's Miles Davis poster. Do you remember the Miles Davis poster? It was him looking up at Charlie Parker?
Oh, yeah.
It was too big for him. Do you remember
that? I think we still have that poster somewhere in our house. We actually do it.
We can take a break, bring it back
board.
To you.
Maybe.
I'll ask Christian if he remembers the guy who worked at Denny's who we called Ken Weaver. Ask him if he remembers
Ken
that.
Weaver.
And ask
okay.
if he remembers when he wanted to paint something on the side of his car that said Lando's Ride.
I do remember that.
He wanted us to call him Lando for a while. I don't know.
I remember that. Mm-hmm. I think there was even like an action figure on the hood, maybe. Something on the hood.
He made a Lando Super Mix, I remember. It was probably the first time I heard that as a thing. Like every time the name Lando was uttered in the trilogy, he mixed them together. Right. Lando.
And now there's like the Lando beef, right? Between old Lando and new Lando. Yeah. Which is a whole nother.
Yeah. And also old Lando, you know, he's Sam Roderick on the line. He's in his corn right now. That guy's having a time and talking about his life. And I think it's fascinating. I still think of him as the malt liquor guy.
I kind of think of him as the Scottie Pippen of Star Wars, but that's a whole nother.
You like sports?
I do.
He played basketball. I know who's that is.
Basketball.
He was with the Bulls team. Scottie Pippen. Okay. Yeah. So we're talking about the trees. It's such a, I don't know.
Do you remember how that started?
I might have to back solve a little bit. And what I remember was there'd been something going on. So there was the new college, the NSA or the NCSA. And remember there was the new college governance. There's like the one that Dave was the president of, Dave Dagan, who did manage to got that past Nancy and got that on his diploma, Dave Dagan, just to remember a true legend.
Got the quotes in there. Yeah.
Then went to law school and realized he hated lawyers. He started teaching law anyway. So Dave was over the NCSA, and then what was the term for the governance of New College and USF Campus Council?
Yeah,
sounds right.
All I remember was that there was something happening because the land on which is this ever interesting to so many people? Merlin tries to remember zoning from 1980.
Yeah. They wanted to put a road through, and all they had to do was divert it by about 20 degrees, and they just
who
went the airport.
Was the airport.
SRQ.
The airport.
And whose land were we technically on?
The airport. It's still an issue to this day.
The latest news is the FAA has refused to let a land deal go through now.
The new president.
Is that in the FAA's remit?
Yeah,
they were going to do a land swap between the university because the right wing, you know.
Because you got that guy. Oh, my God, that terrible man.
Yeah. Right. And the new airport CEO, well, not that new anymore. His son worked for Corcoran.
Fred Piccolo.
Yeah. Fred Piccolo.
That was a little fishy.
Anyway, what I remember was that. No. I'll talk about it all you want. My memory of it is so poor.
It's all good.
I remember the part about where we decided to do something, performative. Believe it
well,
or
yeah, that's kind of what I'm.
Yeah,
I want to hear
because,
that story.
It was because they needed a new access road, right? That was going to go through an area that was. There's two big issues you can't really talk about. One is, hey, we're new college; you can't tell us what to do. And the other one, I think, really was like this sort of like, boy, you're getting pretty close to like where we walk around with no shoes on.
Yeah,
but there was really also just a lot of like. Even with most of our like lack of understanding about how the intricacies of, and this will come up again, about how any of this system, if you like, works, was that they needed to build some kind of a road through there that will require, you know, knocking down a bunch of trees. Now, the new college students made a big show of how these were, I don't know, very special trees. Maybe they had some kind of a Japanese spirit in them or something. I don't know. But they were, you know, the usual invasive exotics, I think.
Sarasota.
There was an oak tree there, I think.
Yeah, I want to say there were oak trees, and part of the deal was, like many airfields in Florida, I think, Sarasota Airport was built on the remains of a World War II actual airfield. Military.
That's how we get, isn't that how we also got the...
And that's how we got the art
sculpture.
Barracks.
Yeah, right.
And the deal is that the grove is where like people's sculptures that they didn't bring home kind of all wound up, kind of perched in the trees, and you walk through there and... I've got a couple things still around here.
I'm just trying to err on the side of being.
So there's a lot of art in there. It's like,
well, okay, these are all true things, but like, all you need from to understand my motivation to do it, yeah. like, which is dumb, but like, whatever. I mean,
you're like 19, right?
But no, but I'll see, I despise that thing we do where we act like we were ever any different people or we're better now or anything. Yeah, it's just, it's also basic and so American. Instead, it's like the thing I say, and quote myself, is that every day, whether you like it or not, everybody's doing the best they can.
I guess my point is a little more like at 19, if you're acting like a blasé middle-aged man, you're not exactly.
Yeah, you're not really sucking the marrow out of Dort Schrag.
Exactly.
But all I would say is that, hey, that was plenty enough reasons for me.
Yeah.
Was like, hey, you guys are, and they were dicks. Like, yeah. We were interesting people who read books, and these were guys in suits with cars. And like, I don't know, I don't want to make it too dumb, but that was plenty enough, was that combination of like, yeah, there's art out there. It was that feeling of like, here's my impression of the, whatever it's called, the Sarasota Bradenton Airport Authority, whatever it's called. Here's my impression of them. That's my impression of them.
Yeah.
It was like, whatevs, mm-hmm. we're going to do this thing. And like, yeah. And so I guess it got to the, I'll tell you another thing I do remember. Is it okay to use a cuss?
Please.
It is okay.
What I remember was this came up last week when we were returning a rental car. And I like to drop facts on my family that they don't care about, which is every fact about me. But I said to my wife and my 15-year-old son, as we're returning our car, I said, you see that the rental car place? I used to be in a band with a guy, two guys, that used to clean cars, rental car returns at the airport. I think it was National. And who was the singer? It wasn't Evil. It was because Evil didn't do anything. But like, no, God bless him.
Troy Winfrey has been a guest.
Yeah, but who was the tall guy with the hair who played drums? We were in a band called The Righteous Surf Fucks with the rock and roll umlaut over the years. It was a silly cover band, an excuse for Evil, who I love. Troy was so much fun.
Yeah.
And like the legend of him and John in that horrible second court room, which I lived in a year later. But
did you clean
it was
the walls?
This idea of like, now we've done everything we can. People like Dave, we're trying to, everybody was trying to work the channels to like kind of,
there's like the formal.
They hired lawyers. They went through.
They were trying to get
an injunction, I believe.
They were trying to get it. Yeah.
And I think that the airport.
It was like a matter of
I'm open
days.
To hearing more about that if you remember more about that.
I just read the newspaper article about it. Okay. So they said they got an injunction. They were supposed to wait the weekend. And then I think the airport did what they always do in these situations. They're like, let's just cut it down right now.
Right.
It was Prague all over again. They just rolled the tanks. Like,
yep,
we knew
exactly.
that given day, we knew that the bulldozers were.
And Susan, I mean, it's funny, but not funny. She said that, you know, everyone thought she threw herself in front of the bulldozers, but actually she had just tripped and fallen in front of them.
And thus the legend was, that's so much everybody's life. I meant to.
Yeah.
And so the idea was that I remember at something very early by Righteous Surf Fuck standards, we were going to play a concert. We brought our equipment out in our National Rent-A-Car shirts that Dave had stolen for all of us. And because we the band uniform was National Rent-A-Car polo shirts, which I makes me happy.
It's pretty good, yeah.
We didn't take photos back then. I wish we did. And the idea was that we were going to, I mean, the, not chain ourselves to the trees, but everybody was going to go grab a tree, whoever was into it. And it was exciting, you know, because there was all this talk about it and who wants to do it and what's the plan in terms of like, if this had gone the way it would go for anybody who's, say, not a white college student, like how would we work out the process of this?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to talk more about this because this is the part that's really taken me years to like process is like how easy we had it.
Yeah.
But that was the idea. And that we're going to make the cops have to like deal with us and get on the news and stuff like that. That's
right.
And it was sometime probably mid-morning or so. I remember that. And I don't know, there was something kind of odd and sweet and surreal and a little poignant about it. Like seeing these little skinny, like 18-year-old girls, like putting it on the line for this thing. And, you know, whatever. It's not, you know, it's not like, you know, gosh, like a huge self-sacrifice, but people cared. We all cared. Yeah. The thing I can say without a kernel of corn is like, I care so much about New College. I kind of can't stand to look at it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's not much really. I mean, everybody's got stuff to do, and I'm not sure how I would get my hands around making anything better. But I do know that as much as that place fucked me up, mostly because of my fault, but like I was the dumbest person at that school. I rolled into that school feeling like I've never felt so dumb on so many levels all the time. Like Dave Minkoff, like he had a Beastie Boys. What was their label? Beastie Boys label. Like he went to the Brooklyn Fancy Boys School,
right.
And like he knew about all these bands, and like everybody's coming from all over the place. There's people from other countries.
And Grant did share with us, Merle, you wrote a blog post kind of about New College, so we'll include that in the in the show notes as well. But I think you said there that you learned how to learn at New College.
Yeah, yeah. Can I talk about that for a sec?
That's why I asked.
Yeah, I mean, it was so strange. The story that Grant, were you in the Vonnegut thing, right?
I was in the Vonnegut thing. I think I might have been the first person to force myself alongside
you. You mean the Breakfast of Champions?
Breakfast of Champions. Yes.
So I show up in New College. I've turned this into too much of a tale about what it says about me positively. But like I had not done. Let's just say, suffice to say, I had not done very well in high school, and like probably all of you. I was constantly being told I wasn't living up to my potential, and like
solid B plus.
I failed earth science and music theory when I was a senior.
I failed every math exam I had after my first year.
It was just, and that's one thing with my kid where I'm just like, I never want my kid to have an eating disorder, and I never want them to have this free form feeling that I'm constantly a little bit disappointed. I want to be the anti dad title in that way. I want to be the person who's like, so I have an assigned female at birth kid, right? Who is now my son, Billy, whom I love very much. And I just remember thinking the whole time, this kid's entire life, there are going to be opportunities for people, particularly men, to tell them how they're lesser and to find ways to undermine without, I mean, this is Grant, you remember the shirt. This is hegemonic ideology. I get you to undermine yourself and then I don't have to do it. If I get you to doubt yourself all the time and wonder if you should eat that and wonder if you should be here, how you're dressed and whatever, like it's all cliches, but it's true. Our society loves crushing people who don't want to be crushing other people. If you're into crushing other people, there's a hierarchy and you can move up. But I just always thought like, I want my kid to be weird on their own terms and neurotic on their own terms. And I can't even begin to tell you how difficult that's been for me, because I want the kid, unintentionally, you're like, yeah, well, you're not going to watch that. You're going to watch this, and you're going to read this X-Men, not that X-Men. And like all those ways where like, I will not have bad media in this house and you are not going to be a dumbass. It's simply not permitted.
And for our listeners, Merle is wearing I believe it's a Fantastic Four.
That's Fantastic Four.
So just the comic book reference makes a little more sense.
Alex Ross is doing some great covers.
It's just that it's taken me a really long time to realize a lot of stuff. I guess probably like a lot of people. Maybe one more week we can be a little bit different sometimes as we're a little bit softer and weirder about and willing. I'm discovering that there's a strength in vulnerability that's not obvious to most of the snorks, which is the ability to like be a person. And I used to say, like when I got pseudo famous for having a blog on the internet, it's like my job is to try to be interesting as I become less broken in public. That's what I try to do. And I don't want to make a show of it. It's not like any kind of like I want to lose this much weight or I want to like memorize this many numbers or anything. But it's more like you have to undo so much. Back to that little thing I wrote. I did not realize how much Florida was in me. And I don't mean to be unkind to all my dear friends in Florida, but Florida left a mark on me because there's so much stuff that I have been taught, partly because of how my family was, about how the world is, that comported very nicely with how Florida happened to be. And Florida is a giant crushing machine for a lot of us. I have a lot of issues at this point with trauma and authority that it's taken me a very long time to unpack. And I've just realized that we need to make room for people who don't fit into that dominant paradigm. And we need to make space for that. And that's what New College was for me, even as I failed at so much of what I did at New College, or did not. I mean, I hadn't learned how to learn when I went to New College. And that was the beauty part, was by the end, I felt like you're like, oh, I get it. Like I have to learn how to Kobayashi Maru my way through a lot of life. I need to make decisions to which there is no best or good answer. There's the answer that you can live a little bit more with. And sometimes that means I'm not going to read Dykstra's story this week because I've got to finish this writing thing for Jan Wheeler. And like, you have to do that constantly in a way that is actually strangely a pretty good lesson about life. If you're reading 1,000 pages a week and have to do something intelligent, pseudo intelligent, write an ISP project about Descartes' concept of God. What am I doing? Well, I'll figure it out. I'll go and I'll like get my way through this. And like, But that's what the liberal arts meant to me in that case. I did not benefit from the chance to learn these things alongside science and math. I just didn't have it in me. But like, I feel like so many people, I'm guessing or I'm projecting, that that was part of the beauty of that, that's so difficult to reproduce. It's so difficult to reproduce a set of circumstances where weird people who might not thrive otherwise have a place to become weird on their own terms, maybe in a way that society might even find useful. You never know.
Yeah.
And that's what I meant by that. And the Vonnegut story was just that, oh boy, was this was such a dust up my first semester, was that what's her name? What's her name from the Crystal Meth? What's her name, Grant?
Which Crystal Meth? Which?
The Crystal Method, the woman who edited that. She led this thing where people were so mad because pretty much the entire speaker's budget.
Right.
Academic semester, first semester of 1986. Six. Was going to go to pay the very old white male author, Kurt Vonnegut, to come to campus. Now, if there had been anybody else in the world.
This smells of Stanley Fish nowadays.
Yeah.
Oh, what was his deal?
He's like a professor at New College right now.
Guest.
Stanley Fish is at New College?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Presidential scholar.
Scholar. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Is he like linguist semiotics?
Kind of.
Hermeneutics. It's your word, Grant. I learned hermeneutics. Yep. Hermeneutics.
He's just there because someone invited him. It wasn't about his sole justification.
He's not a five-tool player. It's for you, Mike. He's a regular Dave Concepcion.
He's teaching a class called How to Write a Sentence.
Well, when I was trying to write a book, he was on the same publishing label as I was.
Oh, nice.
His guy came out.
He can write the sentence. That's good.
There you go. Well done. And so,
Kurt Vonnegut.
If it had been anybody else, I could have joined in on it. But as it happened, this is how basic I am. Guys, I grew up in Newport Richey, and the books available at our public library were like How to Make Vests Out of Pop Tops from Coke Cans and 700 copies of Leon Uris's Exodus.
Uh-huh.
And I had somehow discovered Slaughterhouse-Five when I was 15 or 16. And by the time I started New College, I'd read it six times. Now, a lot of you probably read books six times, a million times. Ain't that many books I've read six times. Like that, and like second place would be Confederacy of Dunces. There ain't a lot of books that I've read that many times. Mm. I knew that book backwards and forwards, and it had, as anybody who's ever been subject to my terrible writing knows, was hugely influential on me. And
so
I'm like,
goes.
This is Poti Wheat. Listen. It starts with listen, and it ends with Poti Wheat. Mm. And it just seemed to me like, wait a minute, Vonnegut? Coming here? That's wild. And
this is your first semester,
and people kept saying to us in this way that if I heard this now, I would think it's bullshit. But they're like, you know, you can go make your own classes and stuff if you can find somebody. So, extremely long story, not that short. I go to A. McA. Miller, and I said, "Hey, you know, this guy's coming to campus. Think we can have a class about Vonnegut?" And Mac, who at the time was probably smoking probably three cigarettes, had probably six beers going. You could tell how stressed Mac was by how many cigarettes he had lit at a time. And he'd go, oh, we can do that. Man, it's not Richard Nixon, but this is what Mac.
Yeah.
We can do that. But like, here's what you're going to do. You're going to read all 14 books in 7 weeks. It is a module. You're going to read 14 books in 7 weeks. We're going to meet it was Cody, you, me, Rowan. Cody, you, me, Rowan. Who else?
I think this is the group tutorial where I got a evaluation from Mac Miller that said I was saddled by, what was it, gnomic utterance with moments of brilliance, I think. Gnomic utterance was a wonderful phrase.
I got so many amazing evaluations. One was like, you never want to come this close to unsatting an assignment again. But there was one that was like, he's saying like, you seem to think that, you know, Vonnegut, you apply or ascribe all these things to Vonnegut, but without the supernal influence. And I was like, And then at one point he goes, isn't this part curiously like whipping a dead mule with misplaced rhetoric?
Wow.
Yes. So we get together, I guess, once a week and talk about Sirens of Titan or whatever.
Cat's Cradle? Cat's Cradle's like pretty out there, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We read them all. We read everything up through, I think, didn't we, Grant? Read. Everything up through Palm Sunday, I think.
Oh, Galapagos was a good one.
Yeah, sure. Galapagos. I think
I just started that.
Yeah,
they're really. It? I mean, he's still. Do you like it?
It's good. I'm literally just started it this week.
That one might be my favorite, actually.
Yeah. And like the way he shifted to, like, you can go on YouTube now, which you couldn't at the time because, you know, time. You can just see these wonderful talks that he does. Or there's a delightful documentary about him that I highly recommend. I think it's might be called Unstuck in Time or something, but very good.
He was great in Back to School with.
He was great in Back to School with the great Rodney Dangerfield. But it was just a flyer to like say like, okay, I'm 19 and barely literate, and can we do this? And boy, was it there were some books I skipped or didn't read super well. But we did it, and we'd get together, and we got those evaluations. And then John Mullen, I don't remember to pay the electric bill, but I remember the name of the visiting speaker's head. I was like, hey, you know, when he speaks here, is there any chance we can say hi? Long story short, he says, Kurt Vonnegut, he's an old guy, and he's tired, and he wants to get back to the Hyatt. But he says, it's a Friday night that he spoke. He said, if you come out to the Hyatt tomorrow morning, he'll take you all to breakfast.
That's awesome.
And so we sat and ate breakfast with Kurt Vonnegut for about 2 hours, and he signed my copy of Slaughterhouse-Five with an asshole.
Wow.
Aw.
Any recollections from the actual meal? Because I think Greg was a little eggs. Buzzy on that. Yeah,
I remember eggs.
I also remember because Palm Sunday was his first-ish, like straight-up memoir-ish book.
Oh.
He repeated several anecdotes, which thrilled me. I was like, I know. Or he would talk about like being an old man with his Pall Malls or whatever. And like all these things that you'd heard before. But like that in a nut, like that's an extreme example. And I'm going to quit shucking and jiving. Like any student, even somebody as unaccomplished as high, like it's neat that you could go in and find a way to use a stupid word to synergize all these different aspects of what's happening in your environment to where you get to meet fucking Kurt Vonnegut.
Right.
And if that's not going to happen, it God bless it. That's not going to happen. It
UF
name of the name. No. Please. I was going to say FSU. No, I'm not going to get in trouble. But you know, and so that was so special.
And to do it with your friends. It's like this whole social experience and you're all anticipating it, talking about it for weeks. And it must have been incredible, you know, just to experience and it also, together.
But Megan, were you mostly not sci?
No, I was humanities and poli sci.
Who was your main sponsor?
Jeff Hickson, the French teacher, was my
Mr. Hickson.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Hicksonite.
He was he became a really good friend of ours.
Oh, he was on my committee. He was a dear, dear man. And he didn't get tenure, right?
He didn't get tenure. It was terrible.
He worked so fucking hard.
He
introduced
one
me
of
the Butthole
best.
Surfers.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Killdozer.
Marlo, you mentioned your, he was on, we always ask folks what their thesis was. That's always
unfortunately, that is lost to time. I'm so sorry to say. Most of the time I started as with Dykstra. I moved to Mac Miller, Andrew Dimino briefly. And then I think it's called Changing Context, TV Ideology and Consumerism. And it's just stupid fucking bullshit about whatever. So that was.
Sounds pretty on the nose there, right? I mean, it does seem like there was a lot of.
It was really that summer of 1989. That was my big summer of hip hop. That was Do the Right Thing. That was Pixie's Doolittle. That was me living in Brian Israel's stilt house with no air conditioning. I still owe him rent for that. And boy, did I watch a lot of infomercials. The centerpiece was about the Soloflex infomercial, and it was terrible.
The Soloflex. That's what I remember. Somewhere I have a publication.
It was originally called Soloflex and the Half Hour Commercial before we had a name for that.
Right.
I'm trying to, in my own, just trying to apply like Althusser and who's the big guy? Gramsci and all that. It's like, well, I'm an idiot. But it was Kent Tucker. Became my guy for that from sociology.
Okay.
And then I think it was Professor Hickson, who we always called, Michael and I always called Mr. Hickson, just to annoy him. And I think it was Andrea Dimino, and who else am I forgetting? Somebody else, maybe.
That was three. You had four. I think you only
Dykstra,
needed.
I want to say Dykstra. Maybe.
Dykstra, yeah. I want to say Dykstra was on there,
too. And it was real easy. They were real nice to me. I think they didn't want to beat up on the idiot. So that was, do you guys like your thesis?
There's one chapter that I think is salvageable. And otherwise, I cringe. But yeah, people have looked it up because I have a weird major.
Hermeneutics. I mean, come on. Yeah. You're still kind of cutting it.
Everything in it was like recycled old papers, except one chapter.
It's a struggle I've always had is this, and this became instrumental in the stuff I was trying to do to help people on the internet with my website, was like understanding this impossible, I used to refer to it as focal length, which is not a great description of it, but like in the creative process, you have to learn when to zoom in, when to be macro, and when to be fisheye, and understand the trade-offs of each. Like, because when you're in fisheye, if it looks like a Hype Williams video, you see, quote unquote, everything, but it's all distorted. Whereas if you go macro, you see something in great detail. And the idea is, though, just think in terms of trade-offs. If you've got a Canon with the basic lens, you can zoom in.
I see.
Kind of shitty, but you exclude a lot of other stuff. And that's the creative process.
You focus.
It's the art of knowing when to zoom in versus when to pull back. Yeah. Is it really beneficial at this point to start over with a new outline? Or do I need to just sit down and write until something's on the paper? Like,
right.
And that's stuff that I couldn't have had ears to hear that or access to thinking about that if it hadn't been for my struggles at New College, thinking, well, there's a point in that Descartes. I remember Lynn Currier and I, we were up all night and like working on our ISPs. And I had a paper one time, might've been about Locke, but no, it was probably Descartes. And I said, for Doug Langston. And I said, so who is this guy we call God? I still think about that sentence. And I thought it was funny. And I thought it was kind of meta funny. But it's not funny. It's lame. Why did I say that? Like, I still think about it. Like other people that have conversations from junior high that run in their head. I remember this is curious. Isn't this part curiously like whipping a dead mule with this place?
Yeah.
I remember how bad my writing was. And that's what makes me mad.
I'm glad you brought up Doug Langston because I think he's a dark horse for most frequently referenced professors on here. Max way ahead. But Doug's got
not even fair.
Doug's gotten in there ahead.
I just ran into somebody on Mastodon. I ran into somebody on Mastodon a few weeks ago who I was getting, the guy was kind of throwing shapes that he was a New College guy and you're never sure. And I was like, but he did make a reference to something. And I was like, and I clicked through. I was like, yeah, you were at New College in like the 70s. And
he
visited Mac, who at the time of publishing was still alive. He's like, oh, do you know the story about Ruskin? He's like, do you know the story about Ruskin? I'm like, do I know the story about Ruskin? Richard Holt and I left weed on his coffee table. And when we said, where'd the weed go? You know what he said? Oh, I cupped it up in some spaghetti sauce.
Ruskin tomatoes.
Well, there you have it. So Merle, Megan mentioned this going in, your mugshot.
Sorry,
your hair looked amazing in your mugshot. So we just kind of wanted to get into like what was going on there. Was there an infomercial? Was there?
You mentioned shampoo earlier, you know.
No. So you're looking for the 7 takeaways for my hot looks to steal?
Give us a listicle.
Yeah.
There's a whole set on Flickr that I started creating 15 years ago called Merlin's Awkward Hair Journey. Because I've had hair problems. I mean, hang on. Look at this.
You still got a lot of hair. I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, when it's a Muppet,
no
you
shame.
Can make it any way you want.
A little flock of seagulls right now.
I think I just probably needed a haircut. And it bears, there's a thing the great hair artist, José Hebert, used to say in the 19th. Don't laugh. You don't know who he is. Remember José Hebert?
Is he related to Fabio's hair? Fabio's hair. Yeah.
It could be related to Fabio's hair, but there's a thing he used to say. And Kim pointed this out. Kim McShane pointed this out to me, and it's always stuck in my head. I still think about this all the time. He'd be like doing something with somebody's hair. He goes, you know what your problem is? You have two different haircuts. I think about that all the time. And it applies to life. It applies to, look at this. I'm getting quite a look here. It applies to a lot of things in life. But I think I had two different haircuts there because like a lady growing out bangs, I had kind of a situation where I had like, there was things happening here. This part's growing fast. This part's still happening.
Yeah.
And it makes it a little bit like Bon Jovi meets Mullen.
People mentioned your essay that you wrote after the protest called How Jail Is Like Kindergarten.
Oh, shit.
The list. Does that sound familiar to you?
Yeah, what happened post-arrest? Like, do you remember more of that?
Oh, I would love, can we talk about that? Well, I want to hear more about that because I wonder, it might've been red beans and rice era, which is a thing where my famous felonious friend, Dan Catalano had gotten some money and we've created this thing called red beans and rice. And actually, hey, Grant.
Is it a zine or a
pup? Well, yeah, it was, you know, Grant, that thing I do, You Look Nice Today, the thing I used to do.
Yeah, I remember that.
As a journal of emotional hygiene. I stole that from Red Beans and Rice.
Oh, okay.
It's called Red Beans and Rice. I stole it from Catalano, a journal of emotional hygiene, which is, for some reason, it's always been such a funny phrase to me. We're talking about the jail. Is that right?
Yeah, just
the jailhouse now.
From the point of the arrest to
in the jailhouse now.
Is there singing?
Harmonica, perhaps?
There are some pretty specific... but no, they put us in a thing and they took us there and they were like impossibly like nice to us. Spoiler alert, clearly somebody made some calls.
Right.
To make sure that we got treated like the princesses and duchesses that we...
Yeah. Well, in the article, they said that you were like little children or something.
I would say we were like big children, but yes.
And you were all bailed out together.
Large,
like, No one was stuck in the Huskow by themselves for a long time.
I mean, I can't believe I'm going to say this because I never liked this guy. I wonder if Bob Johnson had some, if anybody remembers him from the time. Yeah, he's your basic pork chop man and very well connected. And he looks like he's a man made of pork chops. When he was on, I had to deal with him when I was on the foundation. Yeah, he's one of those guys. Yeah,
and then and you got your mugshot, you got fingerprinted, but besides that,
I'm almost done. Yeah, they take us there. We go. They're like, there's food and stuff. And we was in. You were there, right, Grant?
I was not. I opted. I had a moment of decision outside one of the Hamilton Center classrooms, looking in at Bob Knox, thinking Art of the Novel.
Art of the Novel.
It was not Art of the Novel. Yeah. It was Japanese novel, I think, or postmodern.
Oh wow. Yeah, even tougher.
Art of the Novel sounds like Andrea Dimino.
Art of the Novel, I did not take, which is why I became a hermeneutics major. But it was Bob Knox class. I looked in the window. I looked over at the trees, and I'm like, do I go there? Do I go to the class first?
Right.
And you're like, could you see people?
That thing? We're like, huh?
Could you see people being arrested while you were in Knox's class? Were you looking out the window?
The angle wasn't right to see it, but by the time that the class was over and I came out, the sparsely attended class, I should say, it seemed like most of the action
was still high from that Righteous Surf Fuck show.
Yeah, hey,
did they just do David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust in the style of Bauhaus?
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. I had Domino's one, American Masterworks. That's where we read Moby Dick, The Ambassadors, and Absalom. And I liked two of them a lot and basically didn't read The Ambassadors.
I remember Catalano had a point of pride about never reading Moby Dick as an English major.
I skipped. It's so skippable.
How long?
Well, and everybody likes different parts. Some people like the whaling industry parts. I just think, you know.
I read it on my own. I never read it for a class. Don't think I could do it as a class.
But I had Guitar for the Practicing Musician. That's all I read. So we were in, there was like kind of a, like you see on a TV show, there's kind of like a great room that then like sort of hub and spokes off into like separate cells. And they just put us in this area.
Foucault wrote all about this.
The guys were all in this one. I think the ladies were over in a different one, but. It was real low key. Who was, I'm so embarrassed. I don't remember his name. The wonderful guy, blonde hair, kind of Sid Barrett aspect, super smart, philosophy, Leon.
Leon. Yes.
Leon Porter.
Remember Leon?
Yes. Yes.
And
I remember
Leon,
him
like,
singing
found
violent
projects
films.
To do in jail. He like, you know, wait, let me get it right. He was so goddamn smart. And like, if you ask him a question about like Foucault or something, he'd like, go into this mode and you'd be like, you could do this all the time if you wanted to. And he had projects, but people had things to do. And he was like, whatever. Like he was mellow. There was not what we all at this point know about how people get treated in our carceral society. I didn't get any of that. And eventually they let us go by like probably late afternoon. Hmm. And we felt, you know, like,
I think after the first day, it's usually harder for most people.
And then what was it like? What was it like on campus after? I mean, you must have been kind of like heroes a little bit, right?
Maybe, or I think more likely
or
people
just
were just polite.
Well,
I think a lot of people were probably just kind of polite about going. Mm-hmm. To quote the Sarasota Airport guy, like, okay, whatever, you know, sure.
Right.
Okay, you did your little show. It was very performative. Here's the thing: there's always something, whether it's music, the volume of. Music at Walls. There's always some windmill against which we tilted for everything. And there's always a big battle. And there'd always be like kind of provocateurs. Mm-hmm. You think of somebody like Doug Lachlan or somebody like Tace. There were all these characters or Fania. They were always out there kind of like pushing the envelope.
Yes.
Yeah, the theatrical side of things. I mean,
but also
that
just
was
like
part of New College.
Doug Lachlan, I think, he was a very smart guy who just really enjoyed provoking people and applying a sort of dialectical rigor to a lot of stuff that where most of us just wanted to get through the day.
Yeah.
And I'm glad people like that. I don't know if I put that well, but like there are a lot of folks like that who just they were there to be provocative. And I think there's always something like that going on. In this case, it was this stuff. If anything, I feel like I remember being like, I think that didn't really do much.
I guess it's
just because the trees came down, right? The bulldozers do.
Yeah, it was just really more like, well, you know.
It was like May too, right? It was like late.
It was pretty late. I feel like it was pretty late.
So I feel like by that time it's just hot and people are about to get out of town, you know?
Yeah. And of course, by that time, like a lot of the third or a quarter of the people there are like heavily involved with finishing something, whether it's their thesis, their baccalaureate, their like big papers or whatever. But
right.
Yeah, it was, but I mean, I don't regret it because I don't know what I could have done different, what I would have done different. I despise it when people are constantly Monday morning quarterbacking their youth and acting like now they're something special. Right. Never been anything special. We're right. all just fucking idiots showing up and trying to do the best we can every day. And again, right. that's the pity. Right, right. Pity right. is that our best is never enough. And yet it's what we did every day. Show me the lie. Nobody's right. ever done anything but their best every day. If you could have done better, hey, speak up, Mr. Hermeneutics. Push back on that, as they say on podcasts.
I think I'm a solid 60%.
I guess I just mean that we like to look back retroactively, especially at other people. It strikes me. We like to look at other people and talk about, do better, do the work. Yeah. Why don't you blah? And it's like, well, that's the problem, is that was the best that person could do that day, or they would have done better. I think, I guess I just don't,
well,
I don't.
That little protest eventually produced someone who went in front of Congress, to defend the rights of an accompanying
separate
minor.
His family,
so
yeah.
maybe he cut yeah. his teeth a little bit on that, and something amazing happened in the future because of that,
Well, we tell ourselves these stories. This is something that I'm so fascinated with, and I don't pursue it a lot because it does feel like a little bit of a turns out kind of thing. But there's that thing that happens when people, like if your corpus callosum has been severed and you're able to do these amazing tests,
yeah.
people who've had like anomalous things happen for whatever, maybe to stop extreme epilepsy.
Yeah, seizures.
Maybe you got Frida Kahlo'd. Like something happened, but your two hemispheres are not talking to each other. Yeah, you'll know about this phenomenon. Here's all you need to take away from this. Your brain comes up with stuff every single fucking minute of the day about why you're doing what you're doing. What yeah. you did, what you did, yeah. and the way that it makes sense out of this world. And that is just on one, again, neurological level. Think about right. all the other ways where, like, I'm sure I've soft-pedaled a bunch of stuff I've said today to make myself look good without yeah. even realizing it.
Right.
Because that's what we do. And, like, it's so frustrating to me that, like, that is a bald fact now that we have the facility. Our brain needs to make stories that make life seem cohesive. Mm-hmm. Like, there needs, yeah. and you smell, yeah. once you become aware of this, you just smell it. You just right. run into people who are like, yeah, and that was the day that I learned that we were meant to be together.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. I mean, that's nice, but really, is that what happened? Or yeah. is that how you explain all you've put up with or right. had to put up with for 40 years to right. protect your kid? You had to stay together to like not get the cops involved or the priests involved against right. the also trauma. Read The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. It'll break your brain. This is what happens to all of this. Yeah. Shut up, right. Grant. I see you.
No. I was agreeing. That was non-sarcastic. That was non-ironic. Like, I think that came up recently, didn't it? Body Keeps the Score? That sounds really
similar.
Only
on every show I record. All I'm saying is, like, we are so also pleased with how smart we are. And we're always, it's just almost like, what is it called in the Kipling? Like, just so stories. Like, everything yeah. is the way yeah. it is. Like, in ever
hindsight's 2020. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, ever less the dead Bates Lebowski. This is everything is the way it is for a reason. And I right. chose well. Yeah. And think about how many of the most insufferable people in your life either want to be congratulated. Mostly think about how many of the insufferable people in your life want to be congratulated for how good their decisions are or mm-hmm. have been. If yeah. you really, you can get in that also includes bragging about money, which is the big one. But right. when you meet people and you see this in parenthood, you see this in everythinghood, it's yeah. people who constantly want you, they want to project to you how good their decisions have been, and right. they have proof.
Yeah. That, it all led to shows, this point.
Right.
Yeah. It all was leading up to this. And if I had done any different, you ever hear somebody talk about their birth stories? Pretty fucking bananas. When people are like, oh, I got a tear and it went all the way open and I haven't urinated in 16 years, but it comes through my neck, but it's fine. I love her very much. Everybody's like, and you're like, why would you tell that to a pregnant lady? What are you doing?
Mind you, all the chain smoking she was doing might have contributed to that. Good voice. That's pretty good.
Yeah, wait for that baby.
Bro, you mentioned earlier the foundation. You were on the foundation like any other. What's your relationship been like with New College since 90 yeah. when you graduated?
Well, I don't remember how this happened. I don't know if I ran.
There had to have been an election.
Well, there was a process. It was probably rigged by Sam's dad, as usual. But he's Ken Meismer, lawyer from Newport Richie, originally from Missouri, is the great puppet master of New College. But yeah. anyway, every year at New College, at least when I was there, one graduate, I guess it could technically be anybody who's matriculated, but it's a graduate, is put onto the New College Alumni Foundation. Mm-hmm. And it gets a concomitant seat on the foundation. And I think that's a 2-year thing. Which was really neat for me because, gotcha. I mean, I did live in Sarasota until early 91.
Yeah,
so,
91.
So, like, I was already there. Yeah, yeah. And then I came back for meetings. But it was, I don't know. Oh, boy, did I piss off Roland Heiser one day. Holy shit.
But it was right after you graduated.
I made the general so fucking mad. Oh my God.
How? How did you make the general mad, Merlin?
Oh, my first. So I don't know if you've ever been to like a New College Foundation meeting, but it's in, I want to say Sudikoff. Giant, giant, like big square seats, like some kind of a star chamber. And General Heiser runs the thing and Bob Johnson's there. And like all the mummies that have things named after them are there.
Yep. Right. Although this is no longer the case with the foundation. This is what it was. Yeah.
Oh, Mike. Oh.
Sorry.
But anyway, I was frustrated with the meetings because I was like, because I'm smart, right? I'm here. I'm the new blood. And I'm like, wait, are we going to do anything? Like, it seems like we mostly just sit around and have canapes and collect
clam bakes.
Yeah. And of course, in retrospect, can I just say, I think I understand now that, yeah, that's the point, is you get Jane fucking Bancroft fucking Cook in there. Yeah you're going to give her clams. You're not going to ask her to go out with the clipboard and measure things on East Campus. She's an old lady. But I was like, we need to do more things where there's action items and people have things to do. And I wrote this one page letter to General Heiser. It was just a dumb letter of me saying, I meant it to show that I was smart. Let's be honest. I wanted to seem smart and use words. And then, but I was also kind of trying to say, is there anything I could do to help with making this, as lawyers say, more actionable, to make these things that we could get done rather than just good ideas? Well, that's what the fucking foundation is. It's just talking about good ideas and making donors happy. I didn't get that at the time, but here's what I did. General Roland D. Heiser, in the closing paragraph of that ill-advised letter to General Heiser, did I mention that he's a general?
Yeah.
As was very soon pointed out to me by Mac Miller, you know, there's a word that you...
Colonel Mac Miller.
Oh, for real?
Reserve.
Yeah, for real.
There's an award you never use with somebody in the military, let alone a general. And that word is accountability.
Mm.
And I had no idea what a term of art accountability is in the military and in government in general. And I had said, I think it would be helpful if we have people assigned to these and that would allow more accountability. He wrote me back, he had somebody wrote me back, and he was obviously not pleased with me at all. Mm. And my genitals seized up into my body cavity. And I went to Mac and I was like, what did I do? He goes, there's a problem. You use accountability. Have you ever heard of the GAO? And I'm like, oh, what? Is that a D&D thing? He's like, the General Accountability Office. Accountability is a word you only ever hear when you're about to get reamed and then fired. That's such a help to me. That's such a great example, though, of like, I knew enough to know how to use words.
Yeah.
I didn't know enough about, gosh, sing it along with me, context, understanding how important context is in adult life. I could have probably done that in a lot better way and not with a letter. Maybe I could have gone to somebody that wasn't General Heiser. Maybe I could have gone to somebody like Sam's dad and like and talked about ways to like have a skunk works for this. But I was learning how to learn, but I still had a lot to learn about how to learn.
Mm-hmm. And that maybe just build them back on what you were talking about before. I mean, that is part of why we tell these just some stories about our decisions, is so that there's at least something to react to when we're going forward. And then the context you get by the time you're midlife, you don't have when you're 18, 20, you don't have enough spins around the sun to accrue any knowledge, wisdom. Any suggestions for like young novo collegians? We're getting a cross-section of listeners, but folks who maybe are currently at the school or recently graduated and they're kind of in their early career days, because you've had an interesting career on a number of fronts, which we haven't gotten into in a lot of detail. But any thoughts?
I said this several times before, during, I'll probably say it after. I have a complicated relationship with, oh boy, let me quote an author who says, people aren't supposed to look back. But I, you know, that's why I'm a pillar of salt, because I look back. Yeah. My next book is going to be funny. I do feel like Lot's wife a little bit here, where like if I do look back, I don't want to spoil it. But I also, because of how I'm trying to grow, is like I don't want to dive bomb in as some kind of a sage, because I honestly, I'm confused about what buildings are there even. I don't know what to say about that, but it's something that's probably going to seem very close to pablum that will be very useful to some of those folks in 5 years. I don't mean to be seeking down. You're all categorically smarter than me. I could not get into that school in a million years today. I don't know. It's weird, because like having my kid is, I don't know, I shouldn't go on about it, but like my kid's pretty cool. And like,
I'll enter into college years too, right?
Yeah.
When does that happen? My kid's in 10th grade right now. Just got an internship at Alcatraz. Not to sell souvenirs, but to work on comms. My kid's working at Alcatraz, but is also working at the Exploratorium, which is a really cool kids thing here that's kind of science adjacent.
Yeah.
straight A pluses, even though John Syracuse is A pluses, says A pluses are not a thing. But my kid's doing really well, gets lots of mail from weird private universities. And so in some ways, I do feel like my kid is way better than me.
Could have career corrections. About it.
Well, we show up with what we've got. You know what I mean? It's like we're all our own stone soup in some ways. And it's like, I just, whoever you are and however you got to a new college, this is really more for people in Florida, if I could say. It's just that there's a big world out there and you're going to encounter, I'm sorry, this sounds like a fucking valedict or what do they call it? A commencement speech, but like, yeah. Where's one? But
I'm
the guy in the paper chins. But like, it's just, it's so difficult. I'll use I statements. I found it very difficult when I was a younger person and at that new college, or especially really when I was in high school. I didn't realize how much at the time I was very constrained by the horizons that had been drawn for me, that there were things way beyond that horizon. That's what a horizon is. But I want you to remember that when I was in middle school, we had something called vocational wheel. The vocational wheel was a class every kid in Pasco County had to take, and you would learn wood shop, metal shop, right? And then you could really like accelerate. In following years, you could focus. So what was vocational wheel? It was basically like a Stalinist program. It was basically a way of saying, obviously, for those of most of you who do not excel at other things, we need to give you a trade that helps you stay out of jail. That's what it felt like to me to be a teenager. Like, that's what, I mean, like, I guess everybody feels that way, but there was something, I've been to other places now, and it's not always that way. I bet it wasn't totally like that for Dave Minkoff, I'm just guessing, like where he was. But there was not a lot of ambition widely distributed where I was from. There was not a lot of encouragement. You had to have a car. You had to have an adult who would stick up for you. It helped to have a friend whose dad was a cop. There's just a whole bunch of stuff about living in the world, living in the milieu of, in that case, Pasco County. And anybody who's lived in places like Christian could probably talk about Fernandina, right? Growing up in these places, we all have these memories. One time I was with two cool soccer players. We got pulled over with weed in the car and we got let off. This is 11th grade.
Oh, man.
We got let off because two of the players on the team were twins and that cop was their dad. I got like a whole thing here with this, but like, what would I don't know what I would say to them, except that the best thing you can tell anybody who's young is it's not as bad as it seems. I mean, it probably is as bad as it seems, but like it's more recoverable than it seems. And the world is constantly trying to tell you. This thing I keep referring to, forgive me, is a thing I've been working on for 3 years that I call the Wisdom Project, where I write down all the things it took me too long to realize. Forgive me, but as the band The Wrens says, you know, every song on this record's hard won. Like every one of these is something that was really hard for me to learn. And be careful of people who try to motivate you with fear. Because A, that's all they've got. And B, they know it. If people could motivate you with something besides fear, they would. It's just that fear is easy, fear is fast, and fear is efficient. And we pass that on to our kids. We pass that on to our coworkers. We pass on this idea that traumatizing people and making them fearful of the world and of change and of others is a safe way to go through life. And I really felt that very heavily in Florida and didn't really realize it until I wasn't in Florida. Sorry, I don't want to be mean. Just don't let these people traumatize you into believing this world is normal. Don't let them traumatize you into believing that if you're like deliberately cruel to people you've never met, that improves your standing in the society. That's a very corrosive idea. And if that smells like patchouli, I'm fine with that. But like, whatever you decide to study, whatever building you're in, I don't know if they even have Selby in, I'm guessing all the letter buildings are gone, but whatever building you're studying in, there's something to take away from those things. There's things for you to explore about the world and yourself that are not on the page. And you can learn a lot about kindness and cruelty and context and surviving and maybe even serve thriving, which is a word I just made up.
As the great Ethel Merman once might have said, it's better to sing one song too few than one song too many. We're going to end this episode right here. Like I said at the top, there's more Merle for those of you who want it. And we'll be sharing that as a bonus episode shortly, where we get more of the conversation that you heard here. We're even joined by Megan's husband, Christian Perez, fellow New College alum. Be on the lookout for that coming soon to this feed.
please subscribe, tell your friends, let us know if you want to be on, let us know if you have stories or perspective to share. Thanks for listening.